Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, we'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Junkies here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves. Joining me from a safe distance, my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
And from the socially distant bullpen, Chris Zook.
Hello, people.
And our special guest this week, station manager Jared McKediak, also host of And the Rest is Noise on Saturday evenings from 7 to 9. I'll plug his show as well.
Hey, what's up?
So we invited Jared on because we are talking about the movie Major League, which features his favorite team, the Cleveland Lindors, although they weren't called the Lindors at that point.
They still
aren't, unfortunately.
They were called they wrapped themselves into the their nickname, let me tell you, in this movie.
Oh, do they ever. We will get into that. But first, as we did with Connor, maybe let's talk a little bit, Jared, about how you came to be a Cleveland baseball fan.
So when I was probably about 6 years old, I spent the summer with my grandma and grandpa down in northern Minnesota, a little town called Little Fork. And my grandfather was probably, between my grandfather and my dad, the reason why I love baseball. And so my grandpa was a diehard Cardinals fan. And for some reason, he didn't like the Twins. He liked the Twins, but didn't love the Twins, right? And so he said, well, you know, you got to pick a team. And I said, okay, I don't like the Cardinals. And he's like, well, he's like, maybe you might like the team that I cheer for in the American League. And I was like, oh, so the Twins? He's like, no, I like the Cleveland team. And I asked, well, why? And he explained that he started following them because they were the first American League team to integrate African American players with Larry Doby, who came after Jackie Robinson. So, I mean, I'm not going to lie, when I was a kid, the cartoonish logo certainly did appeal. There's a lot that's wrong with that logo, obviously, and I'm going to hear about it tonight, I'm sure. But yeah, I've been a long-suffering Cleveland baseball fan for the last, 37 years?
And so. Suffering is the like operative word there.
They've been to World Series at least
during my lifetime three times. And they have had victory in their sights and it's been snatched away unceremoniously. And I mean, you guys all watch the movie. There's a montage of newspaper covers and clippings, and you know, they haven't won since 1948. So, what are you gonna do?
Hey, if the Cubs can win, anyone can win.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so that montage of clips that kind of like progresses over what about four decades, I guess they skip through the like late 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and then obviously, so this movie's 1989, but it's a thoroughly like, it feels earlier than 89.
Well, like, it feels definitely like an 80s
a mid 80s movie. But yeah, so I mean, at that point, and I'm trying to think back to like kind of what the Cleveland's kind of regular season records were around that time, like, because this isn't the, you know, improved late, like early 90s Alomar.
No, this was kind of right. So this was kind of in the middle of an era where people thought that Cleveland baseball was on the come up, and they are sort of epically remembered for the 1987 baseball preview issue cover of Sports Illustrated, where they pictured Joe Carter and Corey Snyder, and they predicted that Cleveland was going to finally break the curse, was going to win the World Series. And I think that year the team finished with the worst record in the major leagues.
Inside jinx.
Yeah. And it was fairly disheartening because they had – They've never had a problem developing players, but the players usually see their full potential when they end up on a different team. And so, you know, that mid-90s era, and then they rejigged it and brought in some of the old guys left for greener pastures, and they got a bunch more new young players, and they took another run at it, you know. It's just disappointing because I'm convinced they won't win in my lifetime.
I don't know about that. I mean, they do develop a lot of really good players, and you're right. Even though they do sometimes have players that develop in greener pastures, I mean, they always manage to find, it seems pretty much once a decade, they manage to find themselves in a World Series, or at least on the cusp of one.
And I think that the negativity for me is kind of born out of where baseball seems to be going. And I mean, you mentioned, as you affectionately refer to them, the Cleveland Lindors. And, you know, I got an alert on my phone today that said Cleveland and Francisco Lindor still have not started negotiating a contract. And I mean, nobody thinks that he is going to end up signing with them long-term once his deal expires in 2021, and I know that he said that he wants to be there, and you know, they've got a good nucleus of players that they could build around, but the ownership sucks. They're horrible owners, and they're
owned by the Dolans, right?
Yeah.
James Dolan of the New York Knicks. I think they're cousins, or anyways, it's a family rife with poor ownership and lots of money. And I don't know, they kind of, it seems like they treat it as just purely a revenue stream, which, you know, they're not apart from other owners in that regard. But, you know, it's funny to tie it back to the movie. Rachel Phelps, the owner in Major League, her whole deal is that the team, she wants to crater the team as much as possible so she can move them to greener pastures. And, you know, there was
Florida, right?
Yeah. There was a time when, you know, people thought that that was going to happen to Cleveland as well, when they were talking about contraction and, or moving poor performing teams or some of the teams from the Rust Belt to new baseball markets. And I, you know, Cleveland's name came up, Minnesota's name came up, Oakland perpetually, who you talked about last week, they always come up.
And Montreal, and, right?
Montreal,
yeah. So,
and actually, it's ahead of its time because there is no Florida team. There's no Miami, right?
Yeah.
The Marlins, no, I don't think exist at that point in time either, right?
No.
Yeah, I think Miami comes
no
in.
No Marlins, no Rays.
No.
So.
Yeah, this movie kind of does predict that, and like this owner who wants to like move to a, you know, sunnier climate and more lucrative fan base.
Yeah,
it is kind of funny that that's like an 89 thing. Oh, yeah, I know, right? The Miami, not necessarily drawing a crowd, but you know, she definitely.
But they win. Jeff they win the series.
No.
They win.
No.
They won against Cleveland.
That's right. Oh,
Florida won a World Series. I thought you were talking about in the movie.
I was going to say the movie because that's
I don't want to spoil it for people.
Okay.
Florida won two World Series and broke the team down both times afterwards.
Yes.
So the other thing, weirdly, that this movie predicts, and it's not in the movie per se, but I happen to own the Wild Thing edition of this.
Oh boy!
Like the release, and so I just was like, you know what? I'm going to watch some of the special features. After watching the movie and see what there is. There's an alternate ending.
What?
And,
wow.
And what happens...
I don't think I've ever seen that.
No, neither.
And so this is something like I had never... Like, I've watched Major League a couple times. I've owned the disc for a while, but I just never like looked at the
special features. Is this like on Blu-ray?
This is the Wild Thing Blu-ray, yeah. But I mean, you can find it in one of those bins for like $5 these days. But the manager comes in and it turns out that the owner, she's been kind of playing them against themselves this whole season, and she knew that they were better than they were and that this was all like kind of like a long con to get them to play well.
So they made the owner not as deplorable,
like not a villain.
I'm glad that they kept that out.
And
yeah,
so
this is better.
This is
like
the thing is the producer and the director talk about the fact that like test audiences really enjoyed her being a villain, and that this like twist at the end that she's not a villain kind of flew in the face of it. But what I found fascinating, and this kind of made me think about our talk about Moneyball last week, is she actually says they all had flaws that concealed their real talent. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to afford them, in talking about the squad that she assembled. And I was like, oh my God, this is some Moneyball stuff in 1989 from this female owner here. It's weirdly prophetic, but just never came out that this was her plan.
Who knew Major League was the Back to the Future of baseball?
Yeah. One thing that does kind of one fact about the movie post, you know, that it coming out that I learned that really does bum me out is that Willie Mays Hayes, that Wesley Snipes was actually terrible at running.
Oh yes.
That he actually was like really bad at running and really slow. And that's why they film, that's why they show all of his scenes in slow motion to mask how bad he is at running. And it kind of kills it for me that here's this guy that's supposed to be
you just ruined it,
the fastest man on the planet. And he's actually like just really slow. Yeah. But, you know, I mean,
that was
the knock
against him in White Man Can't Jump, too, right? That, like, Woody Harrelson could ball, but Wesley was not a...
Wesley can't.
Yeah.
Not actually a good athlete. But I still think that even if he was fast and could run fast, it would have... I still would have shown it in slow motion because it just looks cooler. It adds more gravitas to it, you know?
When, you know, in the final sequence, Tom Berenger laying down the bunt.
Yeah.
Putting everything in slow motion and kind of making it a protracted scene. That's that.
You're saying Wesley Snipes would not have made it from second base?
No.
In real
he
life.
He might not even have made it to third.
He may have been tagged to third, yeah.
It would have ended that ruined the... There would have been no sequels for this franchise.
Probably would have been better off.
Probably. Since has anyone seen two? I didn't even know there was a third. So
you know what? I'm sure I've seen two at one time because Omar Epps replaces Wesley Snipes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe saying two somewhere, but I don't think.
And then three's Back to the Minors, I think. I've never seen that.
I've seen three.
Okay.
As the title of the third movie is?
Oh, yeah. I think it ended up making less than $5 million at the box office.
Oof.
And it's not even actually about Cleveland, it's about the Minnesota Twins.
Oh, well, then. That's where it fails.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's interesting just kind of doing some background research and reading about things. The guy who directed the first two movies, David Ward, has been pitching since like 2010, 2011, has been pitching a true sequel that would see all of the main guys come back as like coaches or much older players or whatever. So Tom Berenger, Snipes.
Not doing anything. They're ready to go.
And I mean, there is a point, right? So you talk about Omar Epps replacing Wesley Snipes. I mean, there was a point where Wesley Snipes was a huge, bankable actor, right?
And I mean, he sold the Blade series on his name.
Yeah. And I mean, he had White Man Can't Jump, Passenger 57, and
U.S. Marshals.
And he went to jail.
Yeah. And then he didn't pay any taxes on anything that he earned, and then he went to jail, and that was kind of that.
I didn't know that he went to jail. That's interesting. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Tax evasion.
Big time.
Shit, yeah. All right.
Yeah. That's why you haven't heard so much about Wesley Snipes anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's some guys that just ride off into the sunset, right? And they don't really make that many movies. Like, when was the last time Michael Cera made a movie?
Yeah, let's just talk about the star of this movie is Bob Uecker.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Well, okay, he's great.
He's unbelievable.
I think him and the guy who plays the skipper.
James Gammon.
Oh, James Gammon.
Lou Brown.
Yeah, Lou Brown.
He's got a great voice. There's so much gravel in it.
Oh, yeah. No, and he gets to deliver a couple of, like, just wry
just
one-liners.
I think one of my favorite sequences, and it's, I don't know. I'm surprised I didn't get a response on the email that I sent you all about, because I couldn't say it on the show, about getting down on the ball, Dorn. Mm. You know, don't give me any of that.
You play one off the hips, and you owe me 40 sit-ups.
Yeah.
His response to the calisthenics is great, but I think my favorite has always been the sequence where you first meet him. Charlie phones him out of the blue.
He's working in like an auto body shop, right?
He's a manager of a tire place, and he asks him if he wants to come and manage Cleveland, and he's like, "Can I get back to you, Charlie? I got a guy about a set of white walls on the other line." And he hangs up the phone. Yeah, he's great. He's great. He just passed away a couple of years ago, too, I believe.
Yeah, unfortunately.
No. So, but, you know,
yeah, him and Uecker are just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Uecker, like, the just a bit outside and, like, so many other lines that he just, like, deadpans are fantastic. Also, they don't call you not the best color guy in the game.
Right, but Uecker's character also, if you watch back a bit, he drinks every time.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
He's either got a Miller Lite or like the bottle of Jim Beam.
There's the bottle of Jim Beam, and he's got some fruity drink with an umbrella in it. That's
because they're celebrating in the.
Yeah, I guess it's a margarita because it's a slushy, like, right?
That, yeah,
because he's
And so you think. This movie came out in 1989, which makes it 31 years old.
Yeah.
I'm not good with math. Anyways, he's still in a major league booth. Yeah. Bob Uecker, still working for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, is he? I had no idea he was still working.
He still does home games. He's got sort of an allotment of games.
He does three innings or something, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He doesn't do the whole thing. There was one thing I did look up this too, because I was just curious, a little bit of background on it. So for the Cleveland Stadium, that's County Stadium in Milwaukee most of it.
Yeah.
So that's that's probably why Uecker's sort of there a bit. And there's a lot of Milwaukee if you kind of look, you know, on the scoreboard or behind, you know, the scene and stuff like that. But that was kind of cool. Like it's, Uecker is fantastic in this movie.
I have an interesting question. And I want to preface this by saying I'm not asking who is the best, because I think we all know who the best is. But is Bob Uecker the most famous sports commentator of all time? Not only for being in this movie, but he was heavily involved in the mid-80s WrestleManias. He is all over the place in a whole bunch of different things. He made himself very available. Is he the most famous baseball?
He was Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah,
and he was the Great Taste Less Filling.
Oh, he was like a Miller Lite commercial.
Who was it? With Too Tall Jones or with like a football player?
I think he was on several of them. He actually went off. Yeah, he was a big celebrity back in the day. Oh yeah, for sure.
So, he's not the best, right? That's Vin Scully. But I'm just curious about whether or not you guys think he or agree with me that he's the most famous, because I think he is.
I would say he's up there.
He's probably neck and neck with Vin.
People would know who he is, I think.
It's either him or John Madden, right? In terms of, like, sports commentators?
Al Michaels, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Michaels.
Howard Cosell.
Yeah, see.
Cosell's not really, he wasn't really a commentator, though. He was like a...
He was in the Monday Night Football booth, though, wasn't he?
And, I mean, he was also Wide World of Sports, too.
Yeah,
right?
He did Wide World of Sports.
Was Cosell, so...
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. So I'm watching the Jordan doc on Netflix, as I'm sure.
I just saw
it. It's incredible.
Yeah,
it's so good.
And the one guy that Musburger.
Oh, Brent Musburger
interviews him in that, and Costas as well.
Costas remember, is actually early,
Remember Bob Costas? I mean, like, they tried to spin him off into like a late night talk show at one point. He had like a thing after, after Letterman or somebody. Yeah.
So one question I had coming out of this movie that I hadn't really flagged on before is the bunk beds in spring training.
Yeah, the spring training setup is not good.
I was kind of laughing. It
actually mimics how minor leaguers really have to live
in an army barracks. Like it looked like an army barracks.
Have you not?
Look like the Full Metal Jacket recruits.
Yeah, exactly. Tom Berenger was super comfortable.
There are a couple of Instagram accounts that you can go follow or listen to, like different, spoken or written accounts of it. But minor league baseball players basically live five dudes in a one bedroom apartment with nothing but a microwave and a bunch of peanut butter. Like, that's how a lot of those guys have to live because they don't make enough money. So yeah, it's kind of a lot like how minor leaguers actually have to live.
So,
but they weren't minor leaguers.
They're professional baseball players at a spring training facility.
Right, but I mean, like, the whole entire thing is that she's trying to basically run a minor league team in order to be able to relocate.
Right, she's trying to run it. Yeah,
I will say the actual Cleveland locker room did look better than the Oakland locker room in Moneyball.
Yeah, in Moneyball, which is the actual OCO locker room.
I mean, I think it's probably kind of a throwback. I'm sure that this was how spring training was at some point, where the team had the complex, all the players stayed on the complex. There was no families, no distraction, no whatever. But, you know, you think about current players, there's no way that they would put up with anything like that.
But I think in this movie, wouldn't it be also in the guy that she's trying to save money? So, you know, we're throwing them all on this one, and we want to make it really bad because we want
right at the ballpark.
Yeah.
You know, it's attached to the ballpark.
Yeah.
They move Willie Mays Hayes out of his bed, like, just like right beside the field.
Yeah. He
wakes up, I've been cut already.
And then dashes through.
So the Charlie Sheen thing, right? The wild thing, right?
Great haircut.
So the one thing about this too is it actually, again, we talked about it at the start, it actually beget in real life Mitch Williams.
Yeah.
Became the wild thing for the Phillies in the 93 series against the Blue Jays. That's his song. I don't know if he comes in for that, but
that started prior to that. I mean, he was with the Rangers for a while.
I think it comes from this movie, doesn't it? He changed his number to 99, I believe, in real life.
Good thing that worked
probably
out for him.
And I've got an autographed Mitch Williams baseball card.
I'll put that up on eBay. That should get you at least $2.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to lie. So I watched this again last night.
Are you hoping Cleveland wins?
I've seen this movie enough times that I feel comfortable knowing that my team is going to come out victorious.
Your parlay is going to come in this time?
Duke, at least he has a baseball team.
Hey, he's better than I am. You got that right.
I do get goosebumps when he comes in to face Clue Haywood.
It's one of the coolest
sports
movie scenes ever.
It's long too. It's a really long scene.
It's 3 minutes.
Yeah, like
that, from the time the manager comes out to the time that he actually starts throwing pitches. It's 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
He
walks.
No.
Yeah.
Oh. But just when the door kicks open, the first strains of the song come up, and he just kind of swings around the corner, and it just like pans right in on him. And then I love when they go to Rachel Phelps and she's just like, I hate this effing song.
It's so great. And that scene is incredible.
But you know what's incredible about that scene too? That's back before CGI. So real people in the stands. Like there's like, it seems like there's like thousands of people in the stands.
Mike, I know you probably know this better than me, but it's what, like 3,500 people. They sold it out. It's 3,500 people in the stands.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then, so have you guys listened to, there's Bill Simmons did an interview with Kevin Costner about For the Love of the Game.
Ah, there's a good
and
one.
And they talked about how they do the crowd shots. And so they'll shoot the crowd behind third base and then they'll move the crowd. And so they're basically just the same 3,500 people are there and they just basically multiply them around the stadium just by filming them throughout the day. It's kind of a cool thing.
So speaking for the love of the game, I had forgotten like how much of this movie is that Tom Berenger, Rene Russo.
It's that's love bad. Story. That is aged that is very as, badly.
As much as the Kelly Preston, Kevin Costner stuff in For the Love of the Game gets railed against and how like it's a good baseball movie if you excise that, I think the same argument can be made for this one.
100%. I agree so much. It's awful. And like, it's not even, he's not even a good, like, it's not even like a good person, right? Like, he is just
he's a horrible person.
Who's just basically like pressing himself on her constantly. And she's just like, oh, it's awful. It's one of the worst love plots I've ever seen. It's terrible.
And that stupid song that they play. Yeah. Every time. He steals the bullpen cart.
I do love the bullpen cart getting.
I love the bullpen cart gag, but I mean, basically, a bullpen cart is just a modified golf cart. I used to work at a golf course.
He wouldn't have caught up to her.
No, that's it.
She went to her actual home,
whereas she hadn't been to her actual home earlier in the show. So how does he know where she lives?
It's creepy. It's super stalkerish.
And not only that, so then he spends the night at her place. He wakes up the next day. She's gone. But is the bullpen car still out front? Like, because again, knowing what I know about golf carts, they're super easy to, I mean, you can stick pretty much anything that's flat into the key of a golf cart and turn it on. That thing is gone.
Oh, 100%. For sure. 100% gone.
I think you might be thinking too much about this movie now.
Well, I mean, that's something that always bugged me. And
it's got to be in the director's cut. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Speaking of the director's cut,
you mentioned David Ward as the director. He won an Academy Award.
No. Not for Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, he's a good.
He's for like what? He won for The Sting, but he was also nominated for Sleepless in Seattle. He's the writer of both of those.
Yeah.
Well, you get your hits and you get your the ones you got to pay the checks for. You know, you pay the bills.
Yeah, there are good directors that make bad movies. It just happens. It just happens.
This isn't the worst movie. It's just an '80s movie. That's all.
Oh, it's thoroughly '80s. I do appreciate that it starts with a Randy Newman track.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a nice little touch there. You got the janitor from Scrubs with a brief role as the construction guy.
Isn't the guy from 24? He's Serrano, isn't he?
Dennis Haysbert, yes.
Yeah, the president.
Yeah, the president.
Our first black president, yes.
It's a really, like, I mean, in terms of a collection, it's a really good cast. Oh, I mean, because Berenger was
seen as supposed to be the big star.
Berenger's fresh off Platoon, right? Wasn't it the year before he'd been?
Berenger's off Platoon. Snipes goes on to do a bunch of other things, Blade and White Men Can Jump. Rene Russo was pretty quality.
Oh yeah, he's in Tin Cup.
Yeah. Chelsea Ross, the guy who plays Harris, is like one of those guys, right?
He's a critical that guy. He's in Hoosiers.
He's in Mad Men.
He's in The Trouble with the Curve.
Yeah.
He's in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Like, well, he's been in a bunch of sports movies. He's been like Everywhere. He's definitely one of those guys.
That movie's so bad, Trouble with the Curve.
If it comes to it, we might have to end up talking about that movie, just a heads up.
Yeah.
No, you could do 30 minutes on John Goodman's mustache in that movie. So good.
It is a fantastic mustache. I will give him that.
I will find other topics for us to do before. There are a gazillion other baseball movies. We do not have to do that one.
Well, have you guys done Bad News Bears?
No, we have not.
Because that's epic.
That is, and the first one, not the sequels, the first one.
We're banging through movies that have actual teams first, so we can get fans for those teams.
Well, the Houston Astros are number two.
That's right.
That's right. Because they go to play in the
Astrodome.
Honestly, though, I'm not sure I really want to talk to an Astro fan right now. Yeah, they do. That's right, Suk.
Well, we should plug next week. We're going to have Brian's dad on.
No. Next week's my mom with the Cubbies.
We're going to do Rookie of the Year.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
And then we're going to talk 61.
61's a very underrated movie. That's really good, actually.
Talking about that with my old man, and he gets to come on and bang on about the Yankees.
Oh, he's going to it's just going to be sniffles.
I do appreciate that this movie features the Yankees getting their asses handed to them at the end.
Well, and okay, so you mentioned the cameo of the janitor from Scrubs, who's kind of throughout the movie. The two Major League Baseball players in this movie, right? Clu Haywood was a professional pitcher, Pete Vukovich. And then the Duke was Steve Yeager, who won he was the co-MVP of the 1981 World Series.
Oh, I don't want to know about the Yeager. No, that's just...
And that was
Expos flashbacks.
Forget great,
that was another great line from Euchre when he's like, threw at his own son in a father-son game.
Well, I think it's hilarious that they got a catcher to be a relief pitcher, and then they got a pitcher to be the greatest Cleveland killer of them all. Leads the league in nose hairs.
Listen, if you're not brushing your own son off the plate so you can throw that low outside curveball, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, looking at the time, we're unfortunately going to have to wrap things up and hand it over to Front Burner. My thanks to Jared for joining us this week. And we'll be back next week with Brian's mom.
Woo! Woo!
Strike three, you're out!